back on Canuck Central. It's Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah here in the Kintec studio. This hour of Canuck Central is brought to you by your Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Every Vancouver hockey game gets $5 pints of Molson Canadian or Coors Light, plus weekly prize giveaways all season long at your local Lower Mainland Boston Pizza. Canucks and Vegas Golden Knights coming up tomorrow night in the season finale. We'll dive more into the Canucks conversation here in just a little bit. But now we welcome into the conversation former NHLer and color analyst with the Colorado Avalanche. It is John Michael Lyles. Thanks for this, John. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for making time. I gotta ask, you know, as a player, how nice would it have been for you to have like a whole week off before the playoffs actually began? This is an unbelievable schedule for the Avs.
Yeah, I feel like you know, in the years I've been covering the Avs since I retired, I feel like every year that they've been in the playoffs, it's been a 2 or a 3 day turnaround, and the fact that they finished on Sunday night in Anaheim and now it's looking like probably playing Saturday in Dallas is a nice little luxury. And the other part of that too is, you know, Jared Bednar, given that the Avs place was pretty much secured, he was able to give some of his guys, Nathan MacKinnon, Cale Makar, Devon Taves, some of the guys that whether they played in the Four Nations or some guys dealing with, you know, some bumps and bruises, the weekend off as well. So some of these guys are going to have a solid 10 days in between games, which I think is a really nice luxury.
It really is. And for a team that's really come together post-trade deadline as well, after making a number of pretty big acquisitions. And, you know, from your playing career, I'm sure you know sometimes when you make a lot of deals, it's hard for the chemistry to come together. But it seems like that's not the case this time around. What do you think has been the difference?
Well, I think that first and foremost, there were some really nice veteran pickups. And yeah, there are guys that were familiar in their situations in terms of Brock Nelson had played his entire career in the island. And, you know, Charlie Coyle had been on Minnesota and Boston specifically, and he was a Boston kid, played at BU. And so, you know, there are guys that are coming from, you know, I think long-term situations, but they're veteran guys, both have over 900 games. You know, the Ryan Lindgren pickup was a nice pickup, as well as Jack Drury. And, you know, earlier in the season, the Rantanen trade was a huge trade. So, but, you know, Natchez is filled in really well, you know, along with Drury coming over in that trade. And I just feel like those guys had a little more time to gel, and the goaltending has had a little more time to get comfortable with the systems the Avs play. And, you know, first and foremost, I think that Brock Nelson and Charlie Coyle are just two very, very good veteran guys, and they understand their roles. You know, Brock Nelson sliding in as a second line center, I think he's 15 or 16 points since he's come over from the trade deadline, or at the trade deadline. And Charlie Coyle too, he's really, you know, fit into his role. It took him a little bit longer to kind of get going offensively, but he's such a smart two-way player, and they weren't necessarily relying on him for offense, but I think the offense has been a nice little bonus for him as the third line center.
So I know there's a lot of strong candidates for the Hart Trophy this year, but it's got to be MacKinnon's, right?
Listen, I think there's, you know, you could probably make an argument for two or three at least.
And yeah,
I think Nate has a really strong one, right? You know, when you look at the odds that, you know, we talk about the odds all the time, but, you know, Hellebuck, Dreisaitl, and I think MacKinnon are probably the three, you know, favorites, I think, in most people's minds. What I would say is MacKinnon's case is as strong as anybody's, given the injuries that the Avs dealt with early in the season, and two, just the transformation of the roster. When you look at game one, or even game, call it six, you know, early November, and what they were putting out there with, you know, MacKinnon, to where they are now and what Nate did early on to make sure that, you know, and this is Nate, and Cale had his part in that as well, but just make sure that the Avs were still in a playoff position, or even striking distance of a playoff position, because they weren't necessarily in a playoff position early on. I just feel like he's got a really strong case, and just, you know, and he's just had a tremendous season, you know, through and through.
Yeah, you know, I think that's such a good point because early in the season, the depth just wasn't there in the way that it is now after all the moves that they made. And, you know, you'd look at an Avs box score and be like, okay, Nate's playing 24, 25, 26 minutes a night. And it's just like insanity. So maybe it's cooled off a little bit as the season's gone on, but he kept his team. I mean, him and Makar and certainly Rantanen at times, but him more than anybody else kept this team together early.
Yeah, he did. And I mean, there are some really amazing milestones for him this year. You know, he had 1,000 points. He actually hit 900 this season and then 1,000 points later in the year. You know, he had a 26 game home point streak. I think that, you know, there's a lot of kind of cool, you know, subplots throughout the season with what he's done. And when you looked at the box score early on, I mean, I think there was a point, and I can't remember exactly when, I would have to go back and look, but it was like January or February, and I think MacKinnon and Makar had been held off the score sheet, but the Avs won. And I think it was only the third time the Avs had won all year without MacKinnon or Makar on the score sheet. It just goes to show you, you know, how important those guys are to the Avs. And I think, you know, Nate made a really, really strong case for the heart. You know, I think early on in the season, but he backed it up throughout the season. I think just the depth that they got at the deadline allowed Jared Bednar to not have to put Nate out there for 25, 26 minutes and, you know, have a little bit more flexibility of giving him 20 minutes or 19 minutes at times, just to make sure that he's still fresh when playoff time comes around.
Well, you know what a forward would say, you know, it's like 25 minutes for a night like me, that's crazy. For a D-man, that's a breeze. Like 25 minutes is nothing, right?
I don't know. I don't think I had too many nights over 25, and the few that I did, I don't know that I would have called them a breeze. But, you know, some of those guys are ridiculous and can play 28 minutes consistently and not even break a sweat, it feels like.
Well, I mean, we saw Quinn play 30 last night and doesn't look like he's breaking a sweat. But, you know, Cale Makar is obviously incredible. And, I mean, I saw the NHL PA player poll that came out, and almost 72% of NHL players who voted him as the best overall defenseman. Quinn Hughes comes in at 7, but a distant second, but a distant 7.44%. Yeah. But, you know, you watch Cale up close and personal. You've seen him improve and get better year in and year out. Has he found another level this season, or is he just refining his great game?
Well, I would almost say both. I think he continues to refine his game, and you know, the amazing thing is, and what I would say is, you know, Quinn Hughes does this as well, is the amazing thing is everybody keys on those guys. You key on the MacKinnons, you key on the Quinn Hughes, you key on the Cale Makars, and they still find ways to get it done. You know, which to me means that they're refining their game, but they also have the ability to keep kicking it up another level. And I think that, you know, Cale has done that. It's amazing to me just how he's able to separate. And the elite skaters on the back end do it. If you talk about, you know, Lane Hudson as a rookie, what he's able to do with his skating, Quinn Hughes, Cale Makar, you know, just some of those guys that are just elite skaters. The way they separate from forecheckers and the way they're able to, you know, get into spaces that they, you know, I'm not going to say they shouldn't, but it just seems like there's nothing there, and they're able to get there faster than you think is possible. It's pretty amazing. And Cale, it's so fun to watch on a nightly basis because, you know, I think one of the underrated parts of his game is, you know, his defensive abilities. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people see the 30 goals and, you know, I believe is 91 or 92 points this year. And everybody just assumes it's all offense, but he's really smart defensively, and he's got a physical game that, you know, I'm not going to say he's out there crushing guys on a nightly basis, but when he gets a little bit angry, he has the ability to run guys over, and he can throw a reverse hit with some of the best, you know, reverse hitters in the NHL. And it's fun to watch when that happens because all of a sudden, you know, a lot of teams, maybe it's an Eastern Conference team that doesn't necessarily see the Avs more than a couple times a year. And Cale, you know, gets a little angry and he, you know, he hits a couple guys or runs a couple guys over, and you can see the kind of shock and awe on people's faces. Like, wow, I didn't realize that this was necessarily a part of his game. And I don't think it's, you know, top of the list for him, because he's so valuable offensively and what he does, you know, with his skating, but he does have the ability to, you know, to be physical when needed.
Well, and I think it's that physicality and the fact that he is 6 feet and he might be close to 200 pounds now with how strong he is, right? So he's not an easy guy to push around. I think that allows him to play a matchup role, right? And the fact that he's excelling in a matchup role is probably why he's viewed as the best right now.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. You know, Jared Bednar isn't afraid to go best on best, and you know, Cale Makar, Devon Toews are his pairing when he's looking at, you know, another team's top production line. And he's not afraid to throw, you know, Nathan MacKinnon out there at times, although that's not necessarily, I think, his preference, because I think that, you know, he would, you know, rather throw a shutdown pair out there or shutdown line out there a lot of times as a forward line, but he's not afraid to go MacKinnon on another team's top forward line if need be. And yeah, I just Cale and Devon Toews together are just such a really, really strong pair. They're not the two biggest guys in the world, but I think just the way that they skate, the way they see the game, the way that they're able to shut down plays, and you know, they both contribute offensively. Obviously, Toews not quite as much as Cale, but you know, Cale's running that first power play unit as well, which I think is you know that's 75-80% of the power play. So
yeah, it's pretty insane. And thinking back to his Conn Smythe win and how good he was in that playoff, not just offensively but also defensively, you know, shutting down McDavid and then going into the final, it was a well-earned Conn Smythe. And still lots to build on going into this playoff. Now the first round matchup, the storylines write themselves, John, with the matchup against Mikko Rantanen and the Dallas Stars. Dallas kind of petering out here as the season's coming to an end. I feel like it's advantage Avalanche going into this series, even though Dallas has the home ice.
Well, listen, this will be a tough series. You know, Dallas got the better of the Avs last year. You know, there were some other factors that played into that. And when you look at the Avs this year versus last year, it's a completely different lineup. Just thinking about goaltending first and foremost, I think the depth of the Avs this year is, I would call it a 180 from what they had last year. Just given when you have Brock Nelson as your second line center and you have, you know, Charlie Coyle as your third line center, and now you have Jack Drury as your fourth line center. Like, to me, those four centermen with Nathan MacKinnon on the first line there, I don't know that there's a team in the league that I would sit there and say has that kind of depth down the middle. You know, the Avs did a great job of addressing, I think, most of the issues, if not all of the issues that they were, you know, that they had going into the trade deadline. And that's a, you know, huge credit to Chris McFarland, Joe Sakic and their staff. But yeah, the storyline, you know, with Mikko being traded away and, you know, Marty Natchez coming back to the Avs. You know, for me, I think, you know, the guy I'm watching, you know, the most in the playoffs, or at least for the first little while, is Marty Natchez. Because if he can perform in the playoffs, I think that, you know, that's a big thing for him. There's a lot of people that look at that trade and said, you know, if Natchez can perform in the playoffs, then I think, you know, everything works out just fine for the Avs. Mm-hmm. He's played well with Nathan MacKinnon. He's played really well since he came over to Colorado. But yeah, I think the playoffs are kind of where you earn a living, and there's some high expectations with this Avalanche team right now, and Mikko Rantanen being on the other side in the first round is definitely something that a lot of people are going to be talking about. But for me, yeah, going into Dallas, I mean, it's they understand the task that they're going to be they're going to be dealing with. Dallas is a really tough team. They didn't play their best hockey down the stretch, but we always go back to the Avs in 2022 when they won the Cup. I think they lost six of their last seven regular season games, because realistically, it's the playoffs that matter. And so I'm sure Dallas will be ready game one, and hopefully the Avs are you know, going to be in the same boat.
Well, and it certainly looks like Gabriel Landeskog is going to be back with the Avs for the playoffs, played a couple games in the AHL, got a couple points, and just an incredible story. And you've had a first-hand look at how hard he's worked and how long it's taken for him to get back to this level. And how great is it just from a human standpoint to see him get to this stage? And, you know, the fact that he's actually going to play games for the team, like, could he be a big boost for them?
Yeah, I think from a human standpoint, it's amazing to see Gabe back. And, you know, I've had a chance to talk to him a number of times at different points. And, you know, there's been a lot more lows than there have been highs, unfortunately, for him. And that's, you know, over the course of almost 3 years, that, you know, that's to be expected when you continue to have setbacks and you continue to deal with, you know, just the emotional toll, the physical toll that takes, I think that could break anybody. And it just goes to show you how, I think just what a tremendous person, tremendous leader and tremendous competitor that Gabe is, to be able to continue to put his body through, everything he was doing. And, you know, a lot of people, point to, well, he's only been on the ice this and this. And I think that what people don't realize is, you know, everybody only sees about 20% of what he's actually doing, whether that's training off the ice, skating, all these different things that he has done or is doing to try and get himself back to playing shape. And the fact that he was able to play two games for the Colorado Eagles over the weekend, you know, the scoring, the goal and the assist aside, just being out there and for one game, let alone back-to-back games, I think just says, you know, everything you need to know about where he is and how he feels. And I know there was a decision to be made after that Friday game on whether or not he would play the Saturday game. And I know there was probably about 50 people within the Avs organization just sitting there waiting for that phone call that morning of, okay, is this going to be a back-to-back game scenario, or is he, you know, is it a potential setback? And the fact that he played back-to-back games is pretty amazing. And yeah, all signs seem to be pointing to him being a part of the Avs playoffs in one way, shape, or form. Now, I don't know if that's game one, but given who Landy is and what he means to the team, it wouldn't shock me if it's game one. And it's a boost. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, even if he plays 10 shifts and, you know, call that seven of them on the power play, I don't know, but Gabe Landeskog net front on the power play is still a lethal combination. And you know, even if he's not the same player he was 3 years ago, but even if he's, you know, a percentage of that player, I still think the Avs take him any day of the week. And yeah, I can't wait for, you know, if he's still, you know, or if he's in or whatever in game three when the Avs have their first game back at Ball Arena. And if he's in that game, I fully expect the roof to blow off Ball Arena.
Yeah, an unbelievable story. Gabe Landeskog making his way back into the lineup. Hey, John, really appreciate the time, the insights. Enjoy the playoff run.
Yeah. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
There he is. John Michael Lyles joining us here on Canuck Central. 836 games, a lot of them with Colorado, and really good defenseman in his day.
Yeah, really good offensive defenseman, really good on the point. Had some big point seasons as well, over 40 points, I think over 51 year as well. Like, it's a, you know, a really strong career as a defenseman. So interesting to hear his take on the whole Makar debate. Yeah. And I know in this city, we can't talk about Hughes or Makar without mentioning the other, you know, like, they're so intertwined.
Yes.
And I know the NHL,
two at the top of the tier.
Yeah. And I know the NHLPA player poll ruffled some feathers in this market today, that so many players voted for Makar. It's funny because the splits kind of look like McDavid for best forward. He got almost 74% of the vote, and Makar for best defenseman almost got 72% of the vote. And then Nathan MacKinnon was second at 9.6%. Hughes was second at 7.4%. So it's interesting.
Similar.
You know, there's agreement that McDavid's the best, and then there's agreement that the next best is, you know, MacKinnon. And in this case, it's Quinn Hughes, right? So, and I know people get worked up about these sort of things, right? But I think everything we spoke about Makar, and that's probably the if you're giving Makar an edge, it's probably the fact that defensively he plays a tougher role. Like, yeah, it's undeniable. Like, he gets hard matched, and a lot of it is, I think, the size thing.
Yeah.
You know, he's a pretty powerful player, like Lyles mentioned.
He, similar to McKinnon, like, that, where they can both play a power game, right? And that's, you know, that's part of it. And at the end of the day, look, I can sit here and say Quinn Hughes is the best defenseman in the National Hockey League, and I might believe that. I don't expect everybody to agree with me. And I also know people have seen Cale Makar do it in the postseason.
Yeah.
And he won a Conn Smythe.
Yeah,
won a Stanley Cup. And those are accolades that Quinn Hughes has not yet achieved.
No.
So, you know, I can see why it's easy for players to just say, yeah, Cale Makar.
Yeah, and you can make an argument that Quinn's better.
Of course you can.
And you can make a good, compelling argument that Quinn's better. And
of course.
I don't care. Honestly, like, I don't care who you think is better, because Quinn is at that level.
Yeah.
And when you have a player at Makar's level, even if it's, if you think it's slightly below, whatever, who cares? You have one of the two best defensemen in the world. I don't care who thinks who's the best player. You have one of the two.
Yeah.
And that's the biggest thing that matters here, right? And it's interesting, though, because we all like to see those guys go head-to-head, and we do compare the best against the best.
Yes.
But, you know, I could care less who thinks who's better.
it is fun to debate, but at the end of the day, Quinn Hughes, Cale Makar, just be happy that you have one of them. And hopefully that one is here for a while when it comes to Quinn Hughes. So we're going to dive into playoff conversations a lot more as we get closer to the matchups. There is still some jockeying for position being had. Also, there is some final playoff spots that still need to be figured out. The Columbus Blue Jackets still have a chance to catch the Montreal Canadiens in the East. They need to win in regulation over the Flyers. 0-0 right now at the end of one period with Philadelphia and Columbus. If Montreal gets 1 point in their final game, it will be all moot for Columbus. They've got to win out, and Montreal has to lose their one game remaining.
And
Montreal blew it last night against Chicago.
Oh, man. If Montreal has a chance of falling out here.
Yeah.
Like, they're a real chance. Well. They're playing Carolina Hurricanes.
Yeah.
And the Hurricanes don't have anything to play for, but it's still,
but
the Hurricanes
play the same way every time.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter who's in the lineup.
Exactly. And it does, like, they're not going to be an easy team to beat necessarily. And if Columbus wins here,
then it
sets
it
up a really fun final day of the season.
Columbus does have to win their final two games.
Yeah.
But
they got to win first tonight.
It is going to be fun to watch. Also, St. Louis Blues are up against Utah. Calgary's up against the Golden Knights. Calgary obviously needing to win out right now. St. Louis is needing what? A win?
They need a point to clinch,
I think. They need a point to clinch.
Or two. Yeah.
This is their final game of the season. Calgary still got two left and on 92 points. So actually, St. Louis needs to win.
Yeah,
St. Louis needs 2 points.
They need 2 points to clinch.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they need some help from Calgary.
Otherwise, Calgary's got to let up here at some point.
Remember, I was telling you, man, there's a chance they fall out. I'm telling you last week, it's coming down to the final game.
Well,
it's coming down to the final game.
It has come down to the final game.
And there is an impact on the Canucks draft pick potentially. If Utah beats St. Louis and the Canucks lose to the Golden Knights, the Canucks will have the 14th overall pick.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, instead of 15th overall pick.
14th best lottery odds.
Odds, yes. Yes, I mean, they could win the lottery and pick 4th or 5th potentially. Yeah. The Canucks are either picking, well, I guess it's potentially they could pick 16th because a team could leap them.
Yes.
It could happen.
That would be very Canucky,
yeah,
wouldn't it?
The Canucks are pig, yeah. So, I mean, it's a possibility.
Yes. They could also move up 10 spots if they win the lottery.
Yeah, they could.
And draft 4th.
Or 5th, depending.
Or 5th, yep. Depending. Won't hold my breath on that one. All right. Coming up, Harmon Dial is going to join us. His take on the Canucks season. And, you know, it is frustrating. 90 points. Everything that went wrong this year, 90 points. And the Canucks will miss, even though they had a great chance to make. We'll discuss that with Harm next on Canuck Central.